What do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Just pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castles.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle podcast. This is episode 42. It's the insert pun here of Answer to Life, the Universe, and everything. It's Mouse and Castle. It's we talk about all things Disney. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. And I have at my side, virtually, through the Skype machine, of course, Mr. Aaron Goins. How's it going, Aaron?
It's going good. Happy to be back.
Welcome. I'm glad to be talking Disney with you. This is gonna be a fun, more topical show because I know Disney's been in the news a lot the last few weeks, at the center of controversies and pandemics and numbers. We're not talking about any of that in this episode. We're just geeking out old school on Disney stuff, and I'm excited to have a very special guest this week. Help us do that. It's Jen Marie from Anakin Anna's Angel. I've loved your blog for a long time, as well as your Instagram. You're always in the midst of all things Disney and all things Star Wars, so it's the perfect intersection of my fandoms. Welcome to the podcast, Jen Marie. Thanks.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm excited to talk to you about sort of your Disney fandom and a little bit about you, but tell us, like, right off the bat, for people who aren't familiar, how did you get into the world of blogging about Star Wars and Disney, and tell me a little bit about Anakin and his angel?
Sure. So, well, first off, I've been a Star Wars blogger for almost 20 years. Mm. Kind of crazy. It all started after I saw The Phantom Menace. The prequels were kind of like my Star Wars. Even though I grew up with the old trilogy, I felt like my love for Star Wars doubled after I saw The Phantom Menace. And I was really excited about the fact that we were going to have more movies to explore, and so I wanted to create a website that was kind of centered on Anakin and Padme. It's not so much anymore, it's more of like a general blog, but at that time it was centered on those two characters. But I also updated my readers with like all of the upcoming news pertaining to the next few films.
Well, and so that was, I mean, the prequels, you're talking about the dawn of internet fandom. Like,
yes.
It's crazy because I think of sort of my Star Wars fandom didn't, like, come online until after Revenge of the Sith came out, as Clone Wars was getting ready to come out. And I was in high school, and I was just getting into it enough to, like, figure out what blogs and podcasts were. So you've definitely been in the game a while. At what point did Disney, your Disney fandom, intersect? Because I know that's a big part of what you do today.
Yes. So I've been a Disney fan basically since I was born because my parents were Disney fans. So I grew up with Disney movies and, you know, going to the El Capitan Theater for some of the big ones like Beauty and the Beast. It was just a part of my life in every aspect, from like the Halloween costumes and just singing the songs and the car, you know, on trips with the family and stuff. So it's always been a part of my life. And when they acquired Lucasfilm, at first I was like really hesitant about it because I thought the Star Wars story was perfect the way it was. And I couldn't imagine anything else. But, after going to Star Wars Celebration Anaheim 2015,
yeah,
I think it was. That was the year Force Awakens came out, right? Yeah. It was my husband and I and my friend Teresa and Aaron. We were all sitting together and we watched the teaser trailer. And, or was it the trailer?
No, that was the first trailer, I think. That was the teaser.
It was.
I remember. Yeah. I was in the overflow room. We were in the same place, but like,
okay,
but slightly different. But that was a moment in time.
It was, and I was just like, wow, I was completely wrong. This, like, I needed that in my life, and especially because as a not only just a fan, but a blogger, there was not a lot going on. And I didn't feel like I had like creative outlets or as many people to talk to about this thing, this fandom that I love so much. So that was a really big, that day was a really big moment for me as a Star Wars fan and as a Disney fan and as a blogger, essentially, because I finally had something that I could do again as a blogger, if that makes sense.
It is, because I remember the, you know, people talk about the dark days of the 90s in terms of Star Wars fandom, late 80s, early 90s, when there weren't any new films coming out. And that was more of a dearth. But there's sort of a miniature dark age where we had Clone Wars. But it wasn't new films in the way that, you know, it's just not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very different. Like, I think Her Universe might have launched during that time. So we had a little bit here and there, but it's nothing compared to what we have now. I mean, even right now, we have so much to look forward to, not just like the shows, but like games and books and all that kind of stuff to, you know, keep our love for Star Wars alive.
Was Celebration Anaheim your first convention?
It was my first, my first Star Wars convention.
Oh man, talk about a launching pad. Yeah, I'll never forget because like I think if you were to like put language or like a pinpoint maybe in the, in that weekend, that specific convention, it was the Chewie We're Home line. I feel like it's this pure moment in Star Wars fandom history where it's like the collective was the most excited I think it's ever been about Star Wars in a weird way.
Yeah, definitely.
Although
it's funny that you bring up the being at Anaheim and kind of waiting in line to see that. I remember that moment, and I was wondering if you would remember that.
Like
we were all kind of waiting in line, and I think it was the first time that I met you in person.
Yeah,
I think we had interacted online, but and it might be the last time I've seen you in person, actually, because I don't know that we bumped into each other in the celebrations after that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I know. Like many things, I miss conventions. We need, you know, maybe if things have cleared up by next year, maybe D23 is the place to be, because they delayed Celebration a whole nother year. I'm gonna start waving that flag for any Star Wars fans willing to cross over onto the more Disney side, which of course we are, because we started a Disney podcast.
I love the D23 conventions. They're so much fun.
Right. I've only been to one, but it was amazing. I was very impressed by the programming and the effort that they had put in to especially the main panel where they announced all the future film projects. Like, I mean, I guess it's not a surprise that Disney puts a lot of money, effort into making something really good. That's kind of what they're known for. But it really is like a big production. At D23 this might be a good way to explore Star Wars and Disney as they've intersected. What do you think are the differences between, say, something like Star Wars Celebration and D23? Maybe that is a helpful way of contrasting Star Wars and Disney fandom, at least for you.
Oh, that's a good question. I think so one of the big panels at D23 last year, I'm totally blanking on the name, but it was where they would reveal a lot of the upcoming projects. And it was a huge room and, you know, thousands of fans just waiting for those like announcements to be made. And of course they were categorized with Star Wars and Marvel and Disney and Pixar. And the energy that was there to me felt very, very much like being at a Star Wars convention. And when it came time, actually, they opened up with the Star Wars segment.
Oh, interesting.
And people lost their minds. I mean, it was so amazing. It felt very much like that feeling of being at Star Wars Celebration. And I mean, they showed that that I forget what the trailer was, but it was like,
was it the Dark Rey trailer?
Of all the
Maybe,
I'm sorry?
Was it maybe the Dark Rey trailer, or maybe it was one of the behind-the-scenes reels?
It was like a montage of all the story leading up to The Rise of Skywalker, and they revealed new footage. And so they showed the Dark Rey, and everybody was just losing their minds. So I think a lot of the same energy is there. and even walking on the floors, everybody's just really excited to be there and, you know, make conversations, take pictures.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think there is that overlap where I feel like Disney fandom has been slower to the internet culture than Star Wars. I think Star Wars fandom, online fandom at least, was born in the age of the prequels. Like, right, you were there kind of on the ground floor of early blogging and movie rumors and stuff like that, long before Twitter, yeah, or Facebook or even MySpace was a thing. The Star Wars fandom has been plugged into AOL chats and, you know, I feel like Disney fandom, it was born in the VHS collections of family closets everywhere, and it's like just now kind of coming into its own as far as internet fandom.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's so weird to think, like, when I started, the way you interacted with people was through forums and emails. Like, we didn't have all this, you know, the social media platforms and things like that.
Yeah, it is. And I think now that they're kind of entwined through Destiny, through, well, not just the sale of Lucasfilm, but the world of Disney was on its inevitable collision course with Star Wars in terms of the parks when Galaxy's Edge was announced. And that's, I mean, honestly, that's something that we kind of chronicled on this very podcast, our journey to learning each little bit of news, the pictures, and then finally when it first opened and getting our experience there. So I'm excited to actually transition and talk to you a little bit about your experience at Galaxy's Edge and Batuu, because you're somewhat of an expert on it. Like, you've been, how many times did you say you've been to Batuu?
Oh, I've lost count. There were some months where I was going like once a week.
Nice.
I just really love being there.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm so jealous of locals, you locals, the people that live near Disney Park, because being a Disney Park enthusiast, that's kind of like a dream come true. And then as Star Wars fans, like all three of us are both big Star Wars and Disney fans, it's just like, what better place to be when they have, you know, they release something like Galaxy's Edge. It's like, wow, I could literally just go visit Star Wars every day if I wanted to, if I lived next to a Disney park. So I looked into it, you know, I thought about it. I was like, well, maybe I could move to Florida. But in fact, I'm always so jealous when I see people that can just go on a whim.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to do that. And part of the reason why I would go so much too is like, because I know there was a lot of people who couldn't even go or didn't know when they would be able to go. So being able to make people feel like they were there with me or doing giveaways or coverage or whatever it was, like, it was kind of my way of bringing that to the fans.
Yeah, and I like it because some of the photography and the level of detail that you've showcased on your Instagram, which I'm going to plug, because if you're not following, you should definitely follow. It's at Anakin and His Angel, super easy. And that's, you have a whole archive of different photo shoots, items, collectibles, locations all throughout the park. And it's one of those things that the level of detail, I think, is what makes me want to go back over and over again, because I think it's fair to say there's not a lot to do per se at Galaxy's Edge. Like, there's the flagship rides, and those are super cool, but you can go through all of those in a half day easily. But there's so much maybe to experience and explore. Talk a little
Definitely.
Bit about that. Do you think it's maybe a little underrated in terms of just the hangout factor?
I do. I think there's a lot to explore, and when people ask me what are some of the top things that I would suggest that they do, one of the very first things, as silly as it may sound, I tell everybody to look up.
Mm.
Wherever you're at, look up, because there's something to look at, especially in like the shops, like the level of detail and the little like Easter eggs that are hidden, or not even necessarily hidden, but I'm still finding things. I mean, obviously it's closed. I'm not there as of recently, but the last few times I was still discovering things. For example, in Doc Ondar's, you can see General Grievous's cape.
Oh, wow.
Hanging there. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did I not notice that before? But there's so, and Doc Ondar's is like packed with stuff.
Yeah.
So just stuff like that. And I think just trying out new things. I mean, sometimes I see people talking about that they don't want to do the Droid Depot experience because it's like, it's for kids. It's like a Build-A-Bear experience, but it's really, it's a blast. I had a great time doing it. And so did my husband.
What would you say is
like,
what would you say? No, no, I was just going to ask you, what do you think is the, like the most under, if you had to pick one most underrated experience that you can do at Galaxy's Edge?
Ooh,
it's a tough one.
Something to actually do.
Yeah, or any experience that, especially that people just, because I know there's so many, but is there one that just jumps out to you as far as something that people don't talk about as much that they should really know about?
So, I don't know if this is the top one, but it's something that popped into my head just now. If you're a collector, which most of us Star Wars fans are, there are these image data cards that you can acquire from the photographers, and they're similar to the photo pass cards that you can get within like the Disneyland parks, but they're Star Wars themed.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not something that you necessarily need, because you know, when you take the picture and then they scan your phone and it's automatically on your phone, it's essentially like a card that they would scan. So I don't really see people needing to use it because it's on your phone, but just having it is really cool and it's very Star Wars-y. I was just handed one after doing a photo shoot, but I imagine that if you requested one, they would give one to you.
Oh, interesting. I had no idea.
It's really cool. I'll send you guys a picture later.
I think I got one. So do they do that at World and Land?
I am not sure.
Because I think, if I'm remembering correctly, but I've been to both, so I can't remember if I was in Anaheim or if I was in Orlando, but I know I got one of those from one of the photographers.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I don't know many people who have, and I wrote a blog post just specifically about that, and a lot of people had no idea about it. Just kind of like a little hidden gem.
Yeah, yeah. It is, I think, that and some of the character interactions, which they talked up a whole lot in the promotion, but I feel like if you weren't actively following the hype leading into the opening of the various like in-universe things that they try to do, you may not know that, hey, try to interact with the cast member and they'll kind of play along in-universe, and you can do some kind of miniature role-playing, especially for the kids, like seeing the way that some of the characters can interact. It's very different than the lining up for a photo op that you would see somewhere in say the rest of Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, it's very, like, if you take the time, it can be really fun to interact with them. And sometimes they'll even, you know, approach you based on what you're wearing or what you're doing. Like, I was just minding my own business holding Kylo Ren's lightsaber, and Chewbacca came up to me, and he was not very happy. And he made me follow him, and he pointed to the ground. And at first, I didn't see what he was pointing at, but there was a fine line on the ground that separated, like, the Resistance area from, like, the First Order area. And he told me, basically, that I need to not be on the Resistance side. And it was so funny, because it was yet another thing that I did not know. It was a very specific line on the ground.
I knew that there were two areas. I didn't realize that they had a specific divider.
Yeah, and it's very, like, it's not something that you would just see walking around, because it just, it blends in with, like the ground.
Yeah.
But it was just funny.
I love watching Kylo Ren walk around. It's one of my favorite things when he appears, and he just kind of walks through the crowds. And the people that they cast for that role do such a great job of kind of staying in character. And I was there with a friend who really, really wanted to interact with Kylo Ren. And it was almost like the cast member could have sensed that this person was over enthusiastic and just purposely ignored him. Like, my friend would walk right up to him and kind of like try to get in his way and try to get some kind of reaction. And he just kind of slowly would turn away from him. Just like,
oh,
nope.
That's hilarious.
I wonder what kind of training they actually go through for that, because like Rey and Kylo Ren, I would say, are the two, I don't know, most real experiences. Like I remember when my wife now, my fiance at the time, Savannah was there. Ray just came up and talked to her, but she was wearing kind of a Ray Disney bounding kind of outfit. So they just like had a little conversation.
Yeah. I will say the more that you're dressed up or you have like interesting props or whatever, the more likely they are to interact with you. So I always tell people like, hey, if your kids are going with you and they really want that experience, put them in a costume.
Yeah.
Because they're just more likely to do that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Vi around.
I've
just been very unlucky in that I've never seen her walking around yet.
I've seen her once from a distance. I did see her walking off the last time me and Savannah were at World, but she's hard to catch. I think I don't know if it's more rare, more of an Easter egg thing, because it's just not going to be as noticeable, I guess, for the average Disney goer.
I wonder if she's supposed to not be as noticeable since she's a spy.
Yeah,
I wonder if that's on purpose.
More of a collector's item. Yeah, I think it's the thing about Galaxy's Edge that I didn't really appreciate at first was how much the land is themed within itself. It's instead of I was just thinking, you know, Black Spire Outpost as a one place, and there's not that much to it. It's just an outpost. But the Galaxy's Edge is more than just Black Spire Outpost. In fact, I have in my hands, Not to brag or anything, but I do. I just received yesterday. I'm very excited. The Traveler's Guide to Batuu, Cole Horton's new book.
Oh, and how awesome.
I was just flipping through it, and it reminded me, like, they have the land port, they have Merchant's Row, Docking Bay 9, the spaceport, the market, and the forest. And those are all separate areas within Galaxy's Edge itself. And I don't know. It just blows my mind. Do you have a favorite hang spot? Maybe one that's typically less crowded?
Oh, I kind of like the area behind, what's it called? Docking Bay. What did you just say?
I think it's Docking Bay 9. That's what it says in the book. Not 94. Nine.
Oh, yeah. The food and cargo. There's an area behind there that's really cool for like pictures, and sometimes the stormtroopers come in and out from behind that area.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, and then there's
Riley. I think my favorite hangout spot has been like if you get something at Ronto Roasters, and then you can just kind of go over to the steps that are in the marketplace.
Yep.
That kind of lead down into the walkway. And just those steps, you can kind of just sit down on the steps and kind of hang there. That's where I always found myself anytime I just needed to like rest my feet. It's just kind of,
yeah.
And it was nice and shaded over there.
That's the thing. It was shaded, and it was kind of clever because they visually look nice as steps. It looks like a natural travel route, but the way that the actual like main pathways are there, that's not actually the route most people use to walk. So you'd really only use them. And they even have like a couple tables right in the middle if you get lucky, which is like the spot. Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely need more seating.
People really don't walk like those steps. It's funny because if people are going through the marketplace, they tend to kind of stick right through that main thoroughfare, and then people that are going around it, but nobody's typically cutting through on those steps. So it's a nice little alcove to hang out.
Yeah. Is there, And I can toss this to Aaron, you or Jen Marie, if you guys have an opinion on it. I'm curious if you think that it lives up to some of the early criticism of it there being too much shopping, too much focus on shopping and paid experiences, and not enough focus on attractions. Do you think there's room to grow there? Or do you think you can still have plenty of fun without having to necessarily build a lightsaber or a droid or having to go through all the shops and spend all your Disney vacation money?
I think there is enough to do, but it depends on how you look at it, because some people go to Disneyland for different kinds of experiences.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I think for certain kids, it could be a little bit boring.
Yeah.
Because to them, it might not seem like there is something to do. Then again, I know kids who go who absolutely love it, but are they the kids who also build lightsabers or a droid? Because if they're not doing that, yeah, there's really only the character interactions and the rides.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it comes down to preference.
Yeah.
I think I've said it before on the podcast, but sometimes people's expectations are just not fair in that a lot of people saw this area of Disneyland to be a separate park almost, where it's really just an area, you know, at Disneyland Park or at Hollywood Studios. It's not meant to be a fully encompassing all-day experience. It's supposed to just be part of a larger whole. And I think that there's a lot of really cool stuff to do there. But if you're looking at it as a, like, oh, is this something that's going to entertain me for an entire day at a park? Probably not. Unless you're just such a huge Star Wars fan that you just kind of want to wander around and look at all the details. But
yeah,
I think there was some unfair expectation there. But I do think in an area that they could probably improve is doing a little bit more with kind of the character stuff. And I think that they've done great with the Stormtroopers and Kylo Ren and all these characters that walk around. But you still don't get that feel of Star Wars if there's no droids. And I think that the idea of, and I know that the Imagineers have been working on this kind of stuff, so maybe it's coming. But the idea of having these, you know, droids walk, you're kind of rolling around, or even citizens of Batuu that aren't, you know, Stormtroopers, just regular citizens, would be kind of cool to kind of get a little bit more immersion.
Yeah,
I agree. Especially in like, wow, I'm blanking on all the names today.
No, you're good.
The Oga's Cantina.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think could really use some of the characters.
Yeah, have a couple cast members sitting at the bar in, you know, in full costume as a citizen.
I want some ugly guy to walk up next to me and be like, he doesn't like you. I really do. I think it'd be, because Oga's, and that's where I think there's a lot of small tweaks I think that we'll see over time as they improve and improve. It's kind of the escape room factor. Where if you go to like a good escape room, if you've ever had this experience, you'll have a guide in character kind of set you up. I was at this escape room in Atlanta that it was that experience, and they were in costume, they were in character, they introduced the sort of scenario you were in, but they did it completely in character and then left you to sort of solve the puzzle. And, you know, as they interacted with you over the speaker and stuff, they were completely in character. And it was this really immersive experience. And so we have a little bit of that. But, man, I think the idea of even maybe in the First Order area, you know, there's this giant platform there that, you know, Stormtroopers and Kylo Ren sometimes comes out and poses in front of the TIE fighter. Mm-hmm. But if they had like a 10-minute kind of production that was more of a stage show that set up a sort of easy to follow for kids and families ongoing plot of something happening in the park, and then when they're doing those walkthroughs, the interaction is based not just on kind of funny lines but maybe on the experience of these shows that they could do a couple times a day. That would be like little things like that, I think, could really amplify the sort of in universe feel that they were going for so hard.
It's a shuttle, not a TIE fighter, Riley. I just want to correct you.
My God, man.
But they do a little bit of a interaction there. I think it's pretty small, but like when he first comes out of the shuttle, there's like a little, you could kind of call it a show where he interacts with an officer and that type of thing. But I know there was like a bigger scale show with like a whole battle and stuff that had been done at some of the events, but I don't think they're doing that regularly.
Weren't there like X-Wing drones that they did a flyover at some point?
Yeah.
Am I going crazy?
Yeah. Some of the press events. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're going to build those things and use them a few times
For a press event? Like, come on, guys.
Maybe they're that iffy, you know? They're like, we can only fly these things like twice a year.
If we take out a few reporters, what's the harm?
They do look awesome, though. I really would love to see those in action.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be pretty sweet. I really appreciate you coming on the show this week. It's been a lot of fun kind of exploring. I wanted to ask you maybe as a way of wrapping up, what you think the future of Galaxy's Edge will be and where you see the biggest opportunities for improvement. I mean, I've heard all kinds of rumors, of which I have no idea how, you know, accurate any of them are, but the idea of more dining experiences.
Yes.
What do you see as the future of Galaxy's Edge?
Well, we do know that they have land that they've saved for expansion. They've said that. So my initial thought was, yes, they do need a sit-down restaurant. And I think they need a family-friendly ride. And what I mean by that is a ride that doesn't involve the motion thing, because I see a lot of places, like not just Disneyland, but even Universal, they all kind of gravitate towards that kind of attraction.
Yeah.
And a lot of people can't do that. I think you need kind of one that's just like more simple, something that like a little kid could go on, or somebody like me who can't even go on those rides because of having those issues. Something just like, I don't know what it would be, but a ride that is like that.
I mean, maybe it is a good idea to shoot for the traditional ride through attraction.
Yeah.
I mean, they did, yeah. And they have done it recently with Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. We know that that's a ride through attraction, and there are plenty of like technological upgrades, but at its core, it's still that kind of classic Disney ride.
Definitely. Because, I mean, we've seen what they can do now with like everything from like the Little Mermaid ride to Hondo on Smuggler's Run. So I think just like a really simple sit down drive through ride, like you're saying, would be really cool.
Well, let me be more specific. So if they do the dining yes. expansion, a sit down restaurant, what would you want to see?
Oh.
If you had to pick a location, and then spoiler, I'm going to toss it to you, Aaron, too. I want your brain in on this topic, because I hadn't even thought about it, but a sit down restaurant in Star Wars, it'd be amazing, especially with the opportunities for like being waited on by Dexter Jetster. I don't know.
Oh, that would be really cool.
Of course, I went for the Attack of the Clones prequels reference. we could have done what is the one in the other Attack of the Clones dining. Wow, there's a lot of dining scenes in Attack of the Clones. There's the one with him and Padme and the pear.
Yeah.
Set up that.
The thing is, I think I'm having a hard time choosing, because it would have to be themed within Batu and that timeline.
Hmm. That is the tough thing. And they already have.
It would have to be something.
Huh.
Even, I mean, because we know it's set between The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. So even anything that we've seen. What if it was like really classy? Like, okay, I'm not a fan of Canto Bite. But what if it was like a really classy dining experience without that price tag?
You heard it here first. A gambling hall, right? In Disney.
I was actually thinking kind of something similar, because Batu is really like it's a port, and it's not necessarily known for being upscale. But you could have the idea of maybe these First Order officers kind of have this need for, you know, this civility. And so there's a restaurant that's kind of designed for them. You know, where everything's really fancy, and ooh, you know, there's a lot of officers and stuff that attend. That's kind of what I was thinking.
That's a very real idea. Listen, it's very real world. The imagery of you know, the sort of more extreme version of the Empire, which borrowed plenty of Nazi imagery from historical references. You have the kind of Alpine retreat for the officers of the First Order. It would be interesting if there was a dark side themed dining experience.
I would absolutely love that.
Dining on the dark side. You know what? I think we stumbled across it. And it'd have to be like, and this is the thing, it could be more exclusive and expensive. And I think that'd be the way to go, honestly, because there'd be so much demand. Mm-hmm. I mean, Oga's Cantina is always slammed, booked way out. So it'd be hard to, like, even just a restaurant, I don't think could meet the demand. But if it's a more upscale catered experience, it would probably be more expensive, yes, but it would be pretty sweet to have this secret underground retreat in the First Order area. Is that where the land is? This is nerdy. This is really nerdy level questioning. If you don't know, it's fine. But I was curious. I feel like I've seen maps where people have pointed out where they have extra space.
I'm trying to remember.
I'm going completely off the top of my head.
Well, that's part of why I was thinking that it would have to be First Order themed, because I think the extra land is in that direction. I don't think it's on the Resistance side.
Yeah. I think we've stumbled across it. The only other thing, if we wanted to stick close to the theme, is like, the big old Separatist round table in Attack of the Clones. I'm sticking with Attack of the Clones references. just like an underground Geonosis spire.
I wouldn't be surprised if they went with a Hondo type thing, maybe. Just kind of go for some sort of restaurant that's owned by a known character.
Yeah, because they do reference him a lot. In conversation, like when you're purchasing things, if they're out of something, they'll be like, I don't know, Hondo and his ship, blah, blah, blah.
He does seem to be one of the most closely tied in, which I wonder where it was that they decided Hondo's the sort of best character, because like I believe in it because I'm a huge Clone Wars fan, but like I think it's a testament in some ways to Disney, which I mean, initially canceled the Clone Wars, but then they turned around and plucked a character that, I mean, honestly, out of obscurity, that would only be known by people like us who watched every episode.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. I don't know. Maybe...
I think he's the perfect kind of... He's not a main character, so they're not tied up too much. If you put somebody like Lando there, or somebody that's a little bit more prominent, you're kind of eliminating some storyline ideas.
Yeah.
That's
but with
a good
someone
point.
Like Hondo, he's a little bit lesser known. They can kind of put him in this place, and it doesn't... There's no Hondo movie that's coming out, you know. They're not going to creatively handcuff any directors or anything by using his character.
That makes sense. He's a entertaining, fun, recognizable character, big personality. But you're not encroaching on territory of classic characters that need their own space, I guess, to live on in stories.
I'm wondering now how old he is.
Yeah. He is on the older side. He's a little wrinklier.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that level of detail they have for him in Rise of Resistance. The Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run. So I don't know. I just pulled it up because I was doing the thing you do when you podcast. But I was Googling around and I found it. This is from last year when Jim Hill on his podcast. He's kind of like a Disney insider of sorts, both saying that a sit-down restaurant had been fast-tracked and approved. Of course, we don't know how much fast-tracked is. And I don't know how much anything is fast-tracked at Disney right now. Because of the, like, I mean, frankly, the company's going to be pretty cash-strapped. So when it comes to any improvements, like, I wonder, Aaron, if many of those amazing Epcot... improvements and rides and stuff, if that's going to be put on hold. I would be really sad, but hopefully not.
Yeah, probably just delayed a bit, but I think some of the bigger plans they were pretty far down the road on, so
yeah, that's true. I think so. I think we'll still get the flagship attractions like the Ratatouille ride, the Guardians of the Galaxy roller coaster. I think that's all kind of going to be pretty well set in. But
talking
about
this, the more immersive experience coming to Galaxy's Edge, you know, with the Star Wars hotel.
Yeah.
That's still coming. That's still something
Yeah, on track for next year. I'm excited. I'm going to hopefully do it as next year when it opens. That's the plan. That's the rough plan, of course, if possible, in the midst of these crazy times. But you know what? When we can, we will be returning to Galaxy's Edge. As I'm sure you are, Jen Marie. Thank you so much for coming on Mouse and Castle. Again, tell everybody where they can follow you online and what you've been up to recently and find all of your content.
Yeah, thanks for having me. My blog is AnakinAndHisAngel.com. My username on all social media platforms is AnakinAndHisAngel, except for Twitter. I'm at Across the Stars because, unfortunately, AnakinAndHisAngel is too long.
We'll have
Twitter, so
absolutely. We'll have links to everything that you talked about and that we talked about on the show today, and make sure you check it out. Especially you have some great content on Instagram. I love following you there. So we'll link to all that in the show notes. Mr. Aaron Goins, tell the people where they can find you as well.
Shout out to Jen Marie too about her fashion sense and all the awesome posts that she does on Instagram, because that's something that I really appreciate, fashion and design. And so when I see your posts go up, I'm always like, oh, wow, that's such a cool idea or cool outfit.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I should hire you as a consultant because my wife would probably think, thank you, because that is not my area of expertise at all. And listen, geeks are not known for their fashion sense, and I am guilty as charged on that. But yeah, for sure. And Aaron, sorry, I jumped in on you there.
Oh, yeah. So that's, yeah, I just wanted to say that to her because we didn't get to talk about kind of that stuff that she does while we were talking to her. But yes, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at AVGoins. And I actually did do a TikTok because...
No way.
You know?
Oh, wow.
You did not.
I just wanted to see what it was all about. And then I did, and I didn't like it. And I thought I was too old for it. But then I don't know. I gave it a second shot. So I officially have an account, but I haven't posted anything yet. So we'll see.
But listen, send the masses. Go follow him on TikTok, Aaron Goins. And then, of course, the plugs here for the show. Make sure you follow us. It's at Mouse and Castle across social media. Subscribe to the show. Share the show. If you have a Disney fan in your life who likes podcasts, make sure you let them know about Mouse and Castle. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, just swipe right there, check out the notes for the episode, and while you're there, leave us a rating or review. It really helps the show out, and we do appreciate it. Until next time, guys, may the Force be with you. Oh, yeah, and I'm at the Riley guy. I forgot to say, you know, I... You think I'd remember how to podcast at some point? One of these days, I'll figure out how to do this thing.